Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is Gary Golio, artist, musician, psychotherapist, and writer. And we're talking about his latest picture book biography. Everywhere Beauty Is, Harlem. The Vision of Photographer Roy DeCarava. Wow, it's been too long. Welcome back to the show, Gary. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. Same here, Mark.
I got to ask you, every time I get a new book from you in this series, they're beautifully done. They're really informative. You got to talk to me about starting this series off. Did you know that you were going to be doing this series of biographies? And I want to mention a couple of the people involved. Bob Dylan, John Coltrane, Billie Holiday, Sonny Rollins, Charlie Chaplin, Blind Willie Johnson, and now Roy DeCarava.
DeCarava, that's right.
DeCarava, who I had heard of, but I didn't know that much about. So I actually learned a lot from your book, which is ostensibly for young readers. But I have to tell you, this whole series, I think adults would love to read too. But how did it start?
Well, I just want to correct that it is not. If people were listening, they might think it's a series from one publisher, and it's not a series.
No, it's a series from you.
It's a series from Gary Golio, right? So it comes out of the imagination and the interest of myself, and I started off with Jimi Hendrix.
Wow.
Mifflin. And, you know, it was about his boyhood in Seattle, and I went to Bob Dylan and his relationship with Woody Guthrie as his mentor and his, kind of guiding star, and John Coltrane and Billie Holiday and Bird and Diz, Charlie.
Okay, Martin. Okay. Well, I got to stop you here, though, but these are books for younger readers.
Well, you know, they are. Some people write a so-called picture book, illustrated by a fine artist, as if it is only for children. And there are some great books like that.
These aren't like that.
But I don't, and that's because I can be a little more expansive because they're nonfiction, they're really biographies, but they're generally, they encapsulate someone's life by talking about a specific story about their life that kind of says a lot about them. So they're not, I don't see them as written for, they're in that category. They're written for, young readers and all that stuff. But, like the Coltrane book and the Hendrix book. I knew they were using the Hendrix book with young teens and 20-somethings in prison because of the stories about Jimmy and kind of the messages, the value of the story. And Coltrane is definitely like a book for teens and older. And I've had lots of adults write me, and say, wow, this brought me to tears or whatever. And you don't write down. I don't write down to the reader. So, I try to be poetic in my use of language and words, but I also try to be very clear and straightforward so that anyone can read this. And depending on who you are and how much insight you have and how old you are and all that stuff and what you know, you get more or less from reading the same story. I don't know. It's just...
I'm still not getting the answer I'm looking for. I'm looking for way back when this started.
Yeah.
Did you envision a series?
No, not at all. I mean, I did this because my wife, who's an award-winning children's book author... I we were in the same office, we have our same office at home, and she'd be writing on one end of the room and I'd be writing on the other end. Or, in the early days, I was just doing other things because I was a therapist working with people who had addiction problems. And, and one day she says to me, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I don't want to tell you. I'm working on this book," and so it was all about, this was the Jimi Hendrix book. But she was my inspiration because she found things that she loved to tell other people about, and that's what I do. So I started out with the Jimi Hendrix. I had no plan to do anything after that. And then I said, gee, there's this wonderful story about the Jimi Hendrix book was so well received. It was a New York Times. It was on the New York Times bestseller list. And I had NPR interviews and all sorts of wonderful things, and it did very well. And so there was this. I said, "Gee, you know, I love to read about music. I'm a musician. I love to play." And I said, "Well, there's this wonderful story about the young Bob Dylan and how he found the music of Woody Guthrie after he was kind of, you know, in love with early rock and roll, like, you know, Chuck Berry and Elvis, and it changed his life." And I thought, that's a great story about having a mentor and somebody, you know, whether you meet them or not. I mean, Bob did meet Woody, but whether you meet them or not, you have somebody in your consciousness who's like a guiding star for you and a role model. And so I just went on to follow my, you know, to follow my bliss, as they say, you know.
Well,
like,
it's interesting because every one of the subjects of your biographies are people that have a certain kind of being that's positive and interesting. I don't know how to phrase it, but they're people that you really wish you knew personally.
Yes. Yes. Well, they're people that, I mean, and I don't want to sound, you know, too far out here, you know, but I do.
Hey, you did Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, for kids. Oh, you'd be surprised. That
was far out then.
That was a little far out. But
did you ever
know,
see?
I operate on a very spiritual perspective.
I can. That shows.
That's what these people are about. Yeah, I mean, Coltrane, A Love Supreme.
That's right.
Which is what the book leads up to. Is all about his conception of whatever you want to call God or the universe or, you know, the higher self. And he didn't see it as, you know, he grew up, his grandfathers were AME Methodist Zion ministers in the Black Church and, you know, Christian. And yet he was exposed because of some jazz folks that he knew, like Yusuf Lateef. He was exposed to Indian ideas about Indian religion and Buddhism and Taoism and all these things. And he started to have a very expansive view of what we would call spirituality or the spirit. So to me, Jimmy was very spiritual. He's very spiritually minded. If you read some of the things he wrote, you know, the last book I sold last year, which we're just starting to edit now, is about John Cage. And it's about,
oh, whoa.
What is music? What is silence? God. What is noise?
Now, wait a minute. Are you talking about in the same kind of series, so for both younger and older readers?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
John Cage?
John Cage. And
I love it.
I didn't really understand what he was about. I thought, you know, that stuff, okay, sure. You know, it's great to do it, but it's not something I'd want to listen to. But I started getting into it more and more. And when you read John Cage, the things he wrote, his philosophical stuff, the man was brilliant, and he was very spiritually minded, once again, but not in a kind of an orthodox, let's go to church kind of way. You know,
he was very zen.
He was very influenced by D.T. Suzuki, who brought like zen to this country, zen Buddhism, and yet he never saw himself as a Buddhist. So he wasn't like chasing, you know. He wasn't chasing, like, what we would call, like, you know, it's a little self-realization, you know, definitely, but improvement of the self and all that. But he wasn't chasing enlightenment as much as he was chasing understanding and growing and evolving every day. So that's the kind of spirituality I'm really, you know, looking into and have always been attracted to. So, you know, even Billy, I mean, music for her was a spiritual pursuit. She really wanted to move other human beings. In the same way that Jimmy said his concept of electric church, using electric guitars and electric instruments to go into people's consciousness and to move them to kind of higher levels of consciousness. I mean, I don't say that stuff in the books, you know, but except maybe the Coltrane book, but
I think
these people have that in common.
Gary, I have to tell you this. Last week, I was up before dawn, as I often am, and I turned on TCM, Turner Classics, and there's a film, and I never knew existed. I had seen the film Monterey Pop many times.
Oh, yeah.
But they had taken the complete Jimi Hendrix performance and showed it as a complete film.
Yes.
All
yes.
of the Jimi Hendrix from beginning to the end.
Right, right.
And I had never seen that before. And I watched that film, which is Penny Pennybacker. It's the person who filmed it, I think.
Pennybacker, right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm obviously familiar with Hendrix's music and performance. I'd seen him way back in the day. But my jaw dropped. I mean, there was a thing about his performance that was literally out of this world. And yet he was very humorous about that. And I was amazed to see his sort of rapport with the audience. He would talk to the audience and be very loose and positive and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, this was like 67, I think, the performances, or 66.
I think it was 66, Pops. Yeah,
I think the audience has got, you know, ties on and dresses,
of them. It was June of 67.
It was like, yeah, there was the people who knew what they were seeing, but there was a lot of people who had no idea what was happening.
Yeah.
And they were having an acid trip without the LSD.
Yeah,
I mean,
it
was incredible to watch their faces. And just watching him perform and that sort of the wild dance music, playing with its teeth, playing it behind his back.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, setting on fire, the guitar and stuff like that. It was, I had a flashback experience of how amazing a person he was and how deep he was and how really the music really did transcend a lot of things. We got, hold on. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight, and apparently we're sitting in a living room having a beer and just talking, is Gary Golio, artist, musician, and psychotherapist. And we're talking about his latest picture book. And I promise we're going to talk about this next. Everywhere Beauty is Harlem, The Vision of Photographer Roy DeCarava. I got to talk about this book before we get lost in our conversation. First of all, I want to give a huge shout out to E.B. Lewis.
Yes, he's the man, isn't he?
Wow. Talk to me about him.
The things this fellow can do, you know, he's one of those people in my life, a man, you know, who's really like my brother. He's really like a brother to me. We're very close, and I just love him. And I love him as a person, but I'm absolutely floored by his abilities as an artist. I mean, this is a guy who does everything. Everything is watercolor. He doesn't do oils. And the things he can do, I mean, it's almost like sorcery. If you look at the cover.
I know. I was just going to mention the cover.
Just look at that cover. And you're like, how on earth did he do this with this? You know, you're essentially just got water with some pigment on the end of a brush, and he gets these nuances and color. But more important, if you ask, and his name is Earl, but, you know, he's known as E.B. If you ask him, what is the most important thing about the work you do as an artist? And he shows his, so-called fine art, not for books, not illustrations, all over the world in galleries. I mean, that stuff is just incredible, portraits and stuff. But if you ask him what ties it all together for him as an artist, he knows immediately, and this is why we're of like mind. He said, because it's all about feeling. Everything he does, whether it's for a book or for a gallery, it has to communicate the depth of feeling that he feels for whatever subject he's working with. And when you look at, like, the little boy who's inside the cover, you know,
of
a book, or you look at those kids, or you look at the old man, or it doesn't matter how old anybody is or what color they are, you know, it's the feeling that he imparts. And that's, we did a book, I think, I don't know if you interviewed me for that book. It was Dark Was the Night about Blind Willie.
Oh, yes, we did. We obviously.
We did, okay.
Yeah, obviously.
So,
yeah.
You know, that, I mean, the first few pages of that book with the mother and the child, him as a boy, I mean, it's mind-blowing what, you know, the feeling he imparts. And so we did that. We did this book. We're doing, believe it or not, the next book coming out next year is a book about Walt Whitman's nursing experience in the Civil War when
Whoa.
He acted as, yes, and a lot of people don't know about it. And it's not about his poetry. It's about the man who wrote the poetry, who decided to spend almost three years of his life in Washington, D.C., just so he could go and visit military hospitals and soldiers who were dying every single day. And there's a guy with a huge heart. And after that, we're doing a fourth book, which is about the first black Congressional Medal of Honor winner, who was a Union soldier in the original black regiment, the 54th, Massachusetts. You know, like the film Glory.
Oh, and we have the monument in Boston.
Yeah. You have the monument, and that's Gordon's, and that's. That's what it's about. It's about William Carney, who was that soldier. So
wow.
Earl and I, we just love to work together because we're both on the same. And he would say it, I guess, that his work has a very spiritual underpinning in his feeling. Oh, and we can use this to get back to Roy de Caraba, which is, if you ask Roy, why are you different from all the black photographers like Gordon Parks,
right,
or James Van Der Zee, the Harlem Renaissance people or whatever, who were photographing Harlem. Why are you different? And the reason he was different was because he was not a documentarian. He wasn't looking and photographing the people of Harlem as like sociological subjects, He was treating them for the first time as people with deep human integrity, and he said, he saw himself as a humanitarian rather than a documentarian. And when you look at these people that he photographs, you see human beings, and that is really the great beauty of Roy's work.
He was an amazingly sensitive person. There are a lot of quotes of his
sensitive
in your book.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be pretty to be true, but if it's true, it's beautiful. Truth is beautiful. And his photography of people is just, in a lot of it, most of it's black and white. It's stunning. The richness of the portraits. Yeah.
And all natural light. Even when he went into jazz club in Harlem and photographed these jazz luminaries like Duke and Billy and John, John Coltrane and Billie Holiday and all that stuff, always using just the natural light. They're very dark and rich and very full of mood and feeling.
It's amazing. So let's talk about his life, because that's what this book is about. His mother was an amateur photographer.
Yes, and she provided, and there's, I did this conceit. I mean, you can see the book, and people who are listening haven't seen the book, but there are two images that start in the beginning of the book, and one, it's kind of like a day in the life of Roy de Caraba as he walks. He gets off work, and it's the late 1940s when he's first getting into photography, and he takes his 35mm Argus camera, and he loads it up with a roll of film, and he starts walking through Harlem. He gets off the subway, starts walking, and he's just like letting things fill his eyes because he was a great observer. And one of the first things that we come upon is this young boy who's like 5 or 6, and he's on the ground on the sidewalk, and he's drawing with chalk. And he's a chalk artist. He's drawing on the sidewalk. And this is the conceit, because this is exactly what Roy talks about himself doing when he first, at the age of 5 years old, he was out there on the street drawing on the sidewalk. So it's kind of like a conceit about Roy as an older man at 30 years old. We know he wasn't old, but seeing himself. And then one of the next things he sees is this woman, to get back to your question about mom, this woman taking a picture of her son, her young son. And she's got like one of those old Brownie cameras. So this is like, 1949 or something like that. And where you look down and you have to hold it in front of your stomach and you're looking down through the viewfinder. And it's actually another conceit, because it's really him seeing his mother. She took pictures all the time. She was a great role model for him. She took pictures of everything. And it really affected, he saw, well, everything is game for taking photos, you know.
It's amazing. He said that he was inspired by Van Gogh.
Oh, he loved Van Gogh. He initially wanted to be a painter. And he was one of those people who saw very clearly early on, like, gee, you know, my vision for what I'd like to do is never going to happen. I'm just not made to be a painter. I'm not that good at it. And when he found the camera, that's when his life changed.
Now, and he died not too long ago. It was 2009?
2009, yeah.
So he was contemporary.
Yeah, he was 89. I mean, he spanned quite a period. You know, he was born in 1919. He was very affected by the 20s and 30s, the Harlem Renaissance people. And he became a teacher. His work is in the Met. It was, you know, he was the first black photographer to win a Guggenheim Fellowship, which was a big deal, in 1952. And then Edward Steichen, who was a photographer also, but also ran the photo department of MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art in New York City, chose him one of, I think, two, maybe three black photographers to be in that, like, groundbreaking landmark show called The Family of Man.
Right.
At MoMA. That was 1955.
And it was turned into a book.
That's right. So, you know, he was early on kind of singled out as, you know, as a black photographer, but because of his work. And, you know, he later, and then Langston Hughes, the great Harlem, you know, poet, saw his photographs and said, can I use your photograph? Can we do a book together?
Oh, wow.
And Roy said, like, well, what do you mean? I'm going to take pictures of things? And he said, no. Let's use the photos you already have. And he created a story because Roy had taken pictures of so many of his friends in their apartments and on the street and seen through their windows. And Langston said, I can make a story out of this. And it became this beautiful book called The Sweet Flypaper of Life. What a crazy title, right?
Wow.
And so it's about the tenderness of life and the fact that we're alive and we have people we love and friends and family, and we die. So, you know, he kind of tuned into what Roy was doing, because Roy's photographs are about the kind of, you know, it's ephemeral. I mean, we love and we live and we die. And Roy's photographs are about the momentary beauty of capturing a moment of somebody's life. And you may not even know who they are. They may be total strangers that you see, or they may be John Coltrane, you know. But it's another human being. And the point of what he was doing was trying to set up a connection between you as the viewer and the subject of the photograph.
He called it listening with his eyes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, huh?
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, that was amazing. When you put together a book like this, especially with a subject like Roy, you must have to leave out an awful lot, too.
Well, you know, people think you write a picture book, and there's a great deal of, you know, additional information, as you know, in the back, so-called.
Well, as with all your books, there's always a large section at the end.
Yeah, I'm big into that, because I want people
to
telling a story, but then I want to give them information if they want to go deeper, right? You know, but I can spend months and months or a year working, researching, you know, my subject, like John Cage or, you know, Coltrane or Roy. And, you know, you're talking about, like, less than, you know, usually about 1,500 words. You have to be very concise and distilled and poetic. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to get the essence of the story.
That's not easy.
It's not easy, no. No, it's really, it's something like poetry, but it's like writing a summary, in a way, a very poetic summary. But I'm not didactic in the way that I tell the story. I try to, like, tell a story about some aspect of their life that kind of encapsulates who they are and tells you a lot about them without saying, Roy was born in 1919, grew up in Harlem. You know, it's not like that.
No, your books are never like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always a story. There's always a story which is a subset of the person's life.
And the story, you know, because a lot of these books are about musicians, the story is like, you know, I like it to be sort of like a song in a way. So
yeah,
it has a melody, you know. Each book has a different voice. Some are spunky. I wrote the Blind Willie Johnson book in the second person as if the person, when you read it, it's as if the narrator is speaking to Willie, saying, ah, you were born in this little tiny town in Texas, and you grew, you know. So each voice of each book is a different melody and a kind of like a different song, you know.
I love it. I really, really love it. And I love, you know, it's illustrated by E.B. Lewis's watercolors, because and that really gives a liveliness to your recounting the story. But then there's a great reproduction of one of his photographs in the back, the Harlem apartment building in the summer.
Oh, it's not one of his, though.
Oh, it's not. Oh,
no,
photographer unknown. Right. It's
from New York Public.
Right, but
well, you know,
it shows you what it's. But you do have his camera.
Yeah, some people do. You know, like one reviewer said, "Gee, how come there aren't any photos of Roy?"
Well, I think that's an aesthetic choice, and I think it was a good one.
It is, and also it's an economic choice. It's a financial choice because the estate of Roy de Carava is managed by this very big gallery.
We're going to have to end it. We're completely out of time.
Okay. So,
unsurprisingly, we're out of time.
Missions, you know, that's the thing. I couldn't afford to have a picture.
I've been there, done that, and I'll explain it later. My returning guest tonight is Gary Golio, artist, musician, psychotherapist, and author. And we've been talking about his latest picture book biography. They're beautiful. They're always worth picking up and reading. Everywhere Beauty is Harlem, the vision of photographer Roy de Carava. It's a beautiful book. It's a really meaningful book, and that's what I love about it. Gary, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.